Lori and I were on vacation back in October, we did something that we haven't done for 33 years, back when we were 2 years old. No. When we were on our honeymoon 33 years ago, I figured we went probably to somewhere when we were there about on our honeymoon for 12 days. We probably hit between 15 and 20 restaurants between the various meals. And I was thinking back of all of those restaurants that we went to back then, only four of them are actually still in business. All of the rest have gone out of business in the intervening third of a century. Of those four, one of them was Pizza Hut. Yeah, we went to Pizza Hut on our honeymoon, yeah. And the other one is even worse. It was McDonald's. We went to McDonald's on our honeymoon because we didn't have any money. Those two still exist. We don't ever plan to go back. One of the other four that's still in existence is a place called Tanaka's of Tokyo. It's a Japanese restaurant. We've been there a few years ago. Still a pretty good place. But there was one more place that we went to on our honeymoon that's still in existence, but we haven't been to it since 33 years ago. But while we were on our honeymoon, while we were on vacation in October, for the first time since 33 years ago, we went back to this one restaurant. It's called Longy's, and it's in the town of Lahaina on the island of Maui. Now, we've been by it a number of times, walking by it, but we hadn't actually eaten there. We wanted to go there again because our first time we were there was so memorable. Now, it wasn't memorable because of the food. I don't even remember what we ate the first time we were there. So you might say, well, how would you call it memorable if you can't even remember what you ate? Well, it was memorable not because of the food, but because it was the site of our first fight as a married couple. When we went there, we were actually even able to identify the table where we had our first fight. We've got a picture of it. This is it, right here. That's where we had our first fight as a married couple, right there, Longy's. The place looks very much the same as it did 33 years ago. It's funny, when we went in and we were seated at a table, it wasn't this one this time, and our waiter came up and he said, well, have you ever been to Longy's before? And we said, yeah, actually, we had our first fight as a married couple sitting right at that table. And his reaction was kind of weird. He just kind of went, yes, well, glad you're back. May I tell you about our, you know, it's like, I was kind of hoping he'd sort of go with it and make something fun out of it. He didn't seem at all interested. Now, I bring that up because there's an interesting thing. Lori and I, we've taken personality tests, and one of the interesting things the personality tests always show is that while Lori is more outgoing than I am, on the whole, she and I are very, very much alike. We're not one of those, you know, you see a lot of married couples, their opposites attract. We're not like that. We're very, very much alike. Furthermore, both of us are very laid back. We don't get riled up about much. We're very easygoing. And we love each other dearly. And so here's the interesting thing. Two people, very much alike, very easygoing, who love each other desperately. We couldn't even get through our honeymoon before we had a fight. Isn't that interesting? That tells us something about relationships, doesn't it? Relationships are going to involve some conflict. We all know it. You know, I've been talking over the past month or so about simplifying our lives. The most complicating thing in your life is people. They bring more stress than any other thing in your life. You know, do you like macadamia nuts? Who doesn't like macadamia nuts? It's an interesting thing about macadamia nuts. Most people think of them as native to Hawaii. They're not. They actually are native to Australia and were first brought to Hawaii in 1881. But the interesting thing about macadamia nuts is they have the hardest shell of any nut in the world. It takes 300 pounds of pressure to crack a macadamia nut shell. And I like to think of relationships as the macadamia nut of life. Man, this problem of conflict in relationships, that's a hard nut to crack. But like macadamia nuts, it's worth it. It's worth the effort. because we were created for relationships. To be alone in the world is more painful than whatever hurt may come from the little battles that we fight with one another. So we're in this sort of can't live with them, can't live without them situation with other people. And so the question we want to ask is, well, is there any way, given that, you know, our relating to people is going to involve some conflict and it's going to be difficult at times, is there any way to simplify our relationships? And I believe there are. And they're revealed to us in the scripture. And so this morning we're going to look at a passage from the book of Colossians and think about what can this tell us about simplifying our relationships. The verses are Colossians 3, verses 13 through 15. And here's what those verses tell us. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body, you were called to peace. And be thankful. Three basic ideas. First of all is forgive. This little passage of scripture is from a letter written by Paul to a group of people he'd never met. They were a church in the town of Colossae, which was about 120 miles from Ephesus in Asia Minor, today Turkey. He had been in that area in Ephesus for several years, and the spinoff of his ministry in Ephesus was some people went out and they planted churches in the surrounding area, Colossae being one of these. And the problem here was that some false teachers had come to Colossae and they were creating problems. So Paul wrote this little letter while he was in prison in Rome to clear up some of those things. And in the process, he also wrote about, here's how you should live and how you should relate to one another. And so he begins this little section with saying, well, bear with one another. In other words, put up with each other. You know, the reality is we're all going to have differences with each other. It's inevitable in a fallen world populated by fallen people. There's simply no way around the fact that no matter who you meet and how wonderful they might seem, individual or group, at some point, you're going to find out some things about them that maybe aren't so attractive. You know, some things that are actually kind of irritating. Even. Lori and I helped plant a church just beginning several months before we got married, back a long, long time ago. And we started really with a group of about 20 people. And of those, the core of that was a group of six older couples. And they seemed so old and mature to us. Now I realize they're all younger than I am now, but, you know, that's how life goes. And we looked at these people, as we got to them, we thought, these people are the epitome of what followers of Jesus should be like. They were wise and mature and just such good people. What a delightful bunch they were. I mean, we thought, we're not going to have to bear with these people. They're so easy to get along with. They're such wonderful people. Interesting thing happened. Eventually, reality began to set in. One of those couples really was the genuine article. I mean, well, they were all the genuine article, but one in particular, and all the years I knew them and still know them today, one of them is still surviving, I never saw anything from them but Christ-likeness. Amazing people. Just good people full of the grace of Jesus Christ. The other couples were good people who loved Jesus, but they weren't perfect. And we found out. Within a matter of a year or two, the imperfections began to become noticeable. One of the people was a guy that everyone considered one of the nicest people that you'd ever want to meet. But as I got to know him, I began to realize that inside he was full of anger. And it was interesting that it would, every now and then, in unusual situations, it would just pop out. There would be this, you know, emotion that would come out that just didn't fit the situation. It was because of all this anger in him. And as I got to know them even better, I discovered that his anger, though it would pop out occasionally in other relationships, was spilling out continually on those closest to him, and it had huge damage in his family. At one point, this guy asked to meet me for lunch, and I thought he just wanted to spend a little time together. I said, oh, great, let's get together for lunch. We did. He had an agenda. He had a message he wanted to deliver, and he told me that he thought I did not preach enough about judgment. He said he wanted people to hear about the wrath of God, and he wanted people to feel the lash of God's anger on them. And I said, you know, I'm just trying to teach God's word, and when it talks about judgment, I'll talk about judgment. That wasn't good enough for him. He said, if it doesn't get better, my family and I aren't going to be around much longer. They weren't. It wasn't too long before they pulled out. Another man proved to be rigid and almost legalistic in his thinking about Christ, and it had tragic effects in his family. Here were these people that just seemed so wonderful, but boy, as you get to know them, oh my goodness, there were flaws. Years ago, there was a pastor who got some notoriety for writing an article in a journal for pastors that was titled, Beware the Man Who Meets You at the Train. And the message of the article was, the people who are the most enthusiastic supporters when you come to a church as a new leader, watch out for them, because they are the ones who will turn most quickly and viciously on you. Welcome to life in the real world. And we all see it, you know, we see couples so much in love, so excited at the wedding, so full of joy, and within months sometimes, years, they're relationships have turned into a cold war, or in some cases a hot war, ending up in divorce. What happens? We have differences, and they create grievances. It's interesting that this passage really is, that verse 13 is really about forgiving. And bearing up with one another is sometimes just forgiving the flaws. All of us have these flaws and eccentricities and quirks that can be annoying and even cause others to just be angry with us. And Paul says, you need to learn to forgive those flaws. You know, Lori, for instance, has had to learn to bear with the fact that she has a husband who snores. It's not fun in the middle of the night, you know. It has created at least a point of contact for her with her new daughter-in-law, who also has to deal with a husband who snores. But, you know, there are things, we all know that, and married couples, that these things that are just like, wow, I didn't know that about you. And we all have that. Bear with one another. But sometimes the forgiveness will be about more than just an eccentricity or a flaw. Sometimes we'll hurt one another, wound one another, offend one another with words or actions or attitudes. Paul says, here's how you deal with that. You forgive it. This guy named Kevin Harney has written a book entitled Leadership from the Inside Out. He tells a story in that book. It was really kind of sad. He was in seminary. He is married, and he and his wife were struggling mightily with finances, just trying to get by. And he went to his pastor of his church, who was had a fairly significant position in the denominational structure of the denomination their church belonged to. And he asked him, on several occasions he would meet with him periodically, and he'd ask him, you know, we're just struggling, we're going to debt, and we're barely hanging on financially. Is there any help that the church or the denomination could give us, you know, to help us through? And every time he mentioned this, he had about two or three conversations with the pastor like that, and every time the guy would talk about, well, when I was in seminary, it was really hard, and we had to eat cold beans out of a can, and you need to just toughen up, and blah, blah, blah. Well, okay. About a year or two after he graduated, Kevin found out that, in fact, the denomination had, there had been a church in the denomination that had gone belly up but had a bunch of money, and they donated it to the denomination to set up a fund to help students in seminary that were training for ministry from that denomination. And his pastor was on the committee that was responsible for disbursing those funds. He could have said, oh, actually, yes, we have a fund that we can help you. Never did. Man, that hurt. He had to learn to forgive something that was a really hurtful thing. Theologians call the condition of the human race total depravity. That doesn't mean that we're as bad as we can be. But what it means is that every part of our being has been corrupted by sin. Our will, our intellect, our emotions, all of it is affected by sin. Our penchant for serving ourselves is really what that's about. Touches everything we are and everything we do. That means that every person that you encounter, every person you have a relationship with, has the potential for doing some terrible things to you. And they will at times. They'll lie to you. They'll gossip about you. They'll believe gossip about you. They'll sacrifice you for some other personal agenda. It will happen, and it has happened to all of us. And in the midst of that, this verse says, here's how you deal with that. You forgive it. This is so essential to relationships that Jesus said this, Matthew 6, verses 14 and 15, if you forgive men when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their sins, your Father won't forgive you. Whoa. Now, there's a lot of theology that we could talk about there, but let's just be clear on the message. He says, look, the grace of God, the forgiveness that you receive from God should produce something in your heart that will cause you to extend to other people the grace that you have been given by God. The disciples were flabbergasted by Jesus' insistence on forgiving. And so at one point, Matthew 18:21, Peter asked Jesus, well, okay, so we're going to forgive. How many times do we have to forgive somebody? Do we have to forgive somebody seven times? I mean, if you can imagine, if somebody did the same painful thing to you seven times, and every time they did it, you'd say, okay, I forgive it. And then they come back and they do it again. And you say, okay, I forgive it. And then they do it again. And you can say, okay, look, I'll forgive it one more time, but you do this one more time, it's over. You're toast. Peter says, do we do it as many as seven times? Man, that's a lot. So you read verse 22. Jesus says, I tell you not seven times. We go, oh, good. I was afraid he was going to say, yeah, seven, but maybe like, what, two or three, Jesus? He says, no, not two or three, but 77 times. Some scholars believe that actually should be 70 times 7 or 490 times. The point is, there's no statute of limitations on forgiveness. You forgive no matter what, no matter how often. Wow. Paul's soaring description of love is found in 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 8. And in verse 5, Paul wrote this, love is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrongs. I forgave it. It's gone. Boy, a number of years ago, a couple came to see me because they were having troubles in their marriage. This has been probably 6 or 7 years ago. And when they first talked to me, they said, you know, we're having a few issues that we need a little help just resolving some differences. Okay, sound like minor issues. That they need a little assistance, maybe an objective third party to kind of hear it out. So we met, and I said, okay, so what's going on? Boom, off they went. And within minutes, we were talking about stuff that had gone on in their relationship 15 years earlier. And they're bragging these things out and banging each other over the head with them. I'm sitting there going, whoa, what happened to a few little differences? These people were at war, and they had been at war for 15 years, and they were holding on to all of it. Nothing will weigh us down, create more dissonance and more stress in our lives than hanging on to the past hurts and failures of other people. Forgiveness is what brings healing. You know what's interesting? I was thinking about our body's amazing ability to adapt to things. One of the ways that it adapts that I think is really cool is, you know, if you you go on an airplane, you take off, and you're going up, what happens? Well, pressure builds up inside your head, right? You know, and then you have to yawn or chew gum or something, and all of a sudden, your ears pop. Isn't that a great relief? Well, don't you love that when your ears pop? You go, that feels so much better. Your body has this thing where it equalizes the pressure inside your head. Well, I would like you to think about forgiveness as kind of the relational equivalent of your ears popping. You know, the pressure's building up, the stress is there. How do you relieve that? You forgive. Now, I realize it doesn't always work quite that way, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But it is the way we pop our ears and relieve the pressure. Bill Dastic gave me a book called Gray Matter. It's written by Dr. David Levy, who is a neurosurgeon here in the San Diego area. And the book is about his experience as a Christian doing surgery on people's brains that are often, typically, life-threatening situations. In the book, he tells a story of Sam, who was perhaps his most difficult case of his entire career. Sam had it's called an AVM, which is an arteriovenous malformation. It's the veins and arteries in the central nervous system get malformed, all tangled up, and it is a very, very dangerous thing. And so Sam's was on his spinal cord, and it was creating all kinds of difficult, you know, symptoms for him. The problem was, to do anything to try to relieve it would be an extremely risky proposition. A lot of things could go badly wrong. And so, unfortunately, they put it off until Sam's situation was deteriorating so badly, and they had no other option. So, okay, we're going to have to do surgery. And so Dr. Levy met with Sam, and he explained the extreme risk. And he said, this is, you know, it's one of the riskiest I've ever done. These are the things that could happen. He prayed for him. He went and did the surgery, and it seemed like it went perfectly. And immediately, when he came out of the surgery and was conscious, things looked to be great. And then all of a sudden, hours later, bad things started happening. And his condition just went worse and worse and worse and worse until he ended up and he was paralyzed. Dr. Levy, when he met with him post-surgery, Sam was angry. How could you have done this to me? Why did you do this to me? And Dr. Levy told him, I warned you, this was very risky. We did everything we could, but this was beyond our control. We did the best that could possibly be done. And still, Sam was just bitter and angry towards him. He followed up with him a year later, still bitter and angry. And 3 years later, Dr. Levy could not get this guy off his mind. And he said, you know what? I just want to go see him. And he went to visit him. Sam's emaciated, shriveled up, angry man. And as they talked, Dr. Levy finally said to him, Sam, I did everything I could, but I want you to know, I want to apologize to you for what happened to you. I never wanted this for you. And I am sorry for what happened to you, for what I did to you. And I want to ask you to forgive me. He said, Sam, this is not about my trying to feel good. It's about your becoming free. If you have resentment or anger or bitterness towards me, you will never be free. Sam was taken aback by the fact that a surgeon was apologizing to him. Doesn't happen very often. And as he talked, Sam said, "I would like to forgive you." And so Dr. Levy said, "I'm going to lead you through the process." And so he said, "You just say these words." He said, "I choose to forgive Dr. Levy for the things he did that hurt me." Took him through the whole thing. Ultimately ended up with Sam finding forgiveness in Jesus Christ. When they were done, Dr. Levy asked him, "Well, okay, Sam, how do you feel?" And Sam said, "I feel much better." And Levy said he had the biggest smile on his face that he had ever seen on Sam's face. He prayed for him at that point and left. And 6 months later, Sam called him. And Sam said, "I am now able to support myself with my arms and actually walk between parallel bars." And he said his voice was exuberant. Sam was changed. He's never going to be able to walk freely. He's never going to get everything back. But his spirit was changed because he forgave. The healthiest thing you can do for your own soul is to forgive others. But let's be real clear about what forgiveness isn't and what it is. Forgiveness is not a feeling. That's important for us. When someone does something that's hurtful for us, it will hurt. And sometimes we have a tendency to think, that still hurts, and frankly, I still feel the pain of that, and so I haven't really forgiven. Forgiveness isn't a feeling. It's not feeling like, oh, now I'm free of all of that. It may still hurt. Secondly, forgiveness is not deserved. You don't forgive a person because that individual deserves to be forgiven. Paul says in this verse, "Forgive as the Lord forgave you." Here's the question. Do we deserve to be forgiven by God? No, we've earned judgment. That's why Christ had to come and die on a cross. So God forgives us even though we don't deserve it. And now he says, that's how you forgive others. Forgive people who do not deserve to be forgiven. Furthermore, forgiveness is not excusing or explaining. It's not saying, oh, well, there was a reason why you were so awful to me, or I'll explain what. You know what? It doesn't demand an explanation or an excuse. Another important thing to remember is that forgiveness is not the same as reconciliation. Reconciliation requires that there be some repentance on the part of the person who needs to be forgiven. All of us know that there are probably people in our lives who have hurt us, and if we said, "I forgive you," that would actually just make them angry because they don't think they did anything wrong, right? So you may have to forgive them, recognizing that there probably won't be any reconciliation until that person comes to acknowledge the wrong that they've done. What is forgiveness? Forgiveness is a choice. It is a decision of the will to say, "I choose forgiveness for this person." Forgiveness is also a process, meaning you will probably have to choose to forgive more than once. We all know that. In fact, many times you have to forgive over and over. You have to choose it repeatedly. One last thing about forgiveness is it is active. Romans 12:14 says, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse." That says there may be people out there who are hurting you, and as you forgive them, here's the thing, not only are you not to seek revenge against them, but you are actually to try to bless them, which means to do good to them. True forgiveness goes beyond saying, "Well, I'm not going to get revenge," to saying, "I'm actually going to extend good to that person." Puritan Thomas Watson, in his book Body of Divinity, wrote, "Forgiveness is when we strive against all thoughts of revenge, wish well to them, grieve at their calamities, pray for them, seek reconciliation with them, and show ourselves ready on all occasions to relieve them. That's real forgiveness. Now, I want you to imagine your relationships being like a boat. Let's say you have a boat, and you're down in Florida, and you're ready to take that boat, and you're going to go out to the Keys, or maybe down to the Caribbean. And maybe this is a sailboat, you know, and so you hoist the sails, and the wind comes up, and the sails fill, but you don't go anywhere. Well, why not? Well, because your boat's tied to the dock, and you didn't set the lines free, you know, until you take those lines back off the cleats on the dock there, you're not going anywhere. Forgiveness is like freeing those lines. As long as you're tied to the dock by hanging on to the hurt, you're not going anywhere. You are stuck where you are. You want to be free? You forgive. You release those lines and you sail away. Forgiveness is the huge step we all need to take in simplifying our relationships. But there's more. Verse 14 says, over all these virtues, put on love. So love is the second thing we need to do if we want to free our relationships, make them simple. In the previous verses, Paul had talked about a number of virtues like compassion and kindness and humility and gentleness. But over all these, he says, love. Now that's a pretty consistent message in the Bible. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 2 says, Paul wrote this, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains. Now I want you to think about that, what he just said there. Imagine that. Imagine that you could be like that. I have the gift of prophecy. I can foretell what's going to happen in the future. I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge. I mean, you know, hey, that Rick Mide, you want to know anything, you go talk to him, he knows it all. He understands all the mysteries of life. He's got it all. Wow, that's pretty impressive. And if I have faith that can move mountains, what a man of faith. Here's what Paul says. You have all of that, but you don't have love, you're nothing. I am nothing. Yeah, you may be able to do the greatest things in the world, but if you don't love, you got nothing, Paul says. Man, everyone, well, we all go, yeah, we're all in favor of love. I like love. Well, who's against love, you know? Everyone likes to think of themselves as being loving. So, okay, here's the question. If everybody is in favor of love and everybody is really loving, why is there so little love in the world? Is that right? Why is there so much conflict? Why do people have so much trouble getting along if we're all loving? Clearly, there's a problem. What's the problem? Well, it probably has to do with our concept of what love is. Remember 1 Corinthians 13, 5? Read it a little earlier. Paul said, love is not self-seeking. Love isn't about me. It's about me giving up myself to serve someone else. Which means anytime I'm thinking about, well, I want this person to do that for me, I want this person to treat me this way or that way, or that person did this to me and they should, that's all about me. Which means I'm not loving. If we say, okay, let's love the way we're supposed to love, like Paul described in 1 Corinthians 13, that is going to really change our relationships. Paul Tripp, we've been listening to, in our marriage refresher, we listened to a CD or a DVD series by Paul Tripp. He defined love in a powerful way. He defined it this way. Love is willing self-sacrifice for the good of another that doesn't demand reciprocation or that the person being loved is deserving. It's giving up myself to seek the good of another person without caring what that person gives back to me or whether they deserve it or not. That's love. Anything less than that actually is selfishness masquerading as love, pretending to be love so that it can use another person for my purposes. Now, you can see that if we all start saying we're going to love like that, That is seriously going to simplify our relationships. A few weeks ago, I mentioned in a sermon that I've been having trouble with our mobile phone provider. Back in September, now, they overcharged us $220 because they did a really dumb thing that made no sense whatsoever. I mean, it was like, what? What are you doing? That's just stupid. So I called them up. I've told you this a few weeks ago. I called them up and I said, here's what you did, and you charged me $220 that I don't owe. And I talked to their customer service rep, and she said, oh, you're right. That should not have happened. I'm going to take care of that. I'm going to get that off your bill. I will call you back in 2 days and let you know that I'm going to take care of it. Never heard from her again. And I told you a few weeks ago that I went through that 3 times. I kept calling them, and every time, we'll get back to you in 2 days. Never hear from them again. I wait a couple weeks. Bills show up. There it is again. You know, Our most recent bill came. After calling them 3 times, and every time, this is a half an hour conversation on the telephone, it's on the bill again. It's still there. I got that bill, and I said, that's it. I'm done. I'm calling them, and this time, I'm going to let them know I've had it. And, you know, I got all loaded. Man, I actually almost wrote a script. I had it all tell. This is what I'm going to let this, you know. And I'm picking up the phone, and it's like the Lord tapped me on the shoulder and said, what is your goal in your relationship with this person that you're going to talk to? And I said, this is not a person. This is a customer disservice representative. This is a foul agent of deception and corruption. I'm just fighting evil in the world, Lord. And then it was like the Lord said, does what someone else has done excuse you from what I've called you to do? And I said, kind of, maybe. I was cornered. Because I knew I was going to have to preach this sermon, you know? What do you do? I thought, okay, my goal is supposed to be to love this person, even the customer disservice rep, you know? So I called, and I was very patient, and I have no doubt I will be calling again in a few weeks. But here's the thing. In all of our relationships, that's our goal. It's simple. You want simple? This is simple. Give up yourself to give good to the other person. That's love, and that's what we're to do in every relationship. It makes it pretty simple. I was just reading recently an article that was about airline incidents. I don't know why I read these things because, you know, we always have them. But anyway, in May of 2010, an airliner with Jetstar Airlines was flying from Darwin in Australia to Singapore. And as they were on their approach for landing, there came a point where the first officer, who's not in charge of the flight, recommended rather, you know, vociferously to the pilot that they abort the approach. Got no response from the pilot. As the plane passed through 720 feet in altitude, which is really low, an alarm goes off inside, warning the pilot to abort. And he just kept going. It was when the plane was well under 400 feet altitude that somehow, finally, the first officer was able to get through to the pilot that he had neglected to lower the landing gear, and they needed to abort. Do you know why? The pilot nearing the airport had turned his cell phone on and was unlocking it and was starting to text. Are you kidding me? I got to tell you, when I get on an airplane, I would like every time to say to the pilot, oh, by the way, the one thing I want you to do is fly the plane. Put your cell phone away. Fly the airplane. That's what you're there to do. Don't worry about anything else. Keep focused on what you're there to do, please. And God says to us, you're in a relationship. Why are you there? You're there to love. to give up yourself to love. Don't get distracted. Don't lose sight of what you're about. This is your role. Oh, that's hard. How are we going to do that? Because, you know, frankly, I'm kind of about me. What about me? Ah, Paul says, here's what you do about that. Verse 15. Peace. Let the peace of Christ rule in your heart. You know, Jesus said in John 14:27, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your heart be troubled and do not be afraid. Man, if we live by, Jesus said, I've got peace, abundant peace for you. Trust in my peace that I will take care of you. And you won't need to be troubled and afraid and upset and stressed and pressured and angry and bitter. Some of our biggest difficulties in life happen because we become afraid and our hearts become troubled. Who's going to take care of me? What about this person going to take advantage of me? They're going to hurt me. Let the peace of Christ rule. Letting the peace of Christ rule means, hey, I'm at peace with God because Jesus Christ has made it possible for me to be forgiven by God. He died on a cross for me. He loves me that much. So God says, now you're my child for eternity. No need to worry there. Furthermore, he says, at every moment of your life, I'm seeking good for you. I'm going to work out good for you in everything that happens in your life. So trust me. And if we begin to do that, we begin to trust in God's love for us and God's goodness for us and his will for us, his sovereignty and his wisdom in our lives, we'll be at peace no matter what other people do. And we can quit worrying about ourselves and start focusing on love. You've heard this story, parts of it before. But on my birthday, I want to tell this again because there's a part of it that I don't think I've told. That was on my birthday in 1979. Lori and I went out to dinner. And we just went out to dinner to celebrate my birthday, but somehow during the course of the evening, we began talking about our relationship. This is before we were married. And in the course of the conversation, it became apparent to both of us, unavoidably obvious, that while we knew we loved each other, we didn't have any place to go in our relationship because Lori really wasn't ready for any kind of commitments, and I was going to be leaving probably, and we were just going in different directions. And to the sadness and sorrow of both of us, we just had to admit, you know, we don't really have any place to go, and we really need to just acknowledge that and move on. And so essentially we said, time to let go of this relationship. Oh, man, that hurt. Because though it was unusual, Lori, I had never met anybody in my life like Lori, and I loved this girl. That next morning, I woke up, and it was just like, you know what that's like when you just had something like that happen. It just hurts. It just hurt. It was sad. And I thought, oh, man, how am I going to get over this? Well, it was that morning, the strangest thing happened. My car wouldn't start. Had a brand new battery in it, didn't work. And I tried a bunch of things to get it go. It wouldn't work. By the time I was finished messing around with it, everybody that I knew had already gone off to their jobs or to school, and I had no way to get to work. There was only one person I knew who hadn't yet gone to school. It was Lori. And I thought, oh, I got to get a ride from Lori. That's terrible. After last night, what am I going to do? So I called her and I said, I am so sorry for calling you after, you know, we talked about this. But you know what? My car's dead. I need a ride. Could you possibly give me a ride to school? She said, yeah, no problem. She said, I'll be there in about an hour. So I had an hour of downtime. I thought, what am I going to do? Oh, gee, I'm in seminary. Maybe I ought to spend some time with God. You know, I didn't really want to. I was kind of mad at him. You know, you ever have that thing where it's like, thanks, happy birthday to me, right, Lord? That's great, thanks. But I thought, okay. So I spent some time with the Lord. And as I was praying, and then I started reading in the Psalms. I remember reading in Psalm in Psalm 90 and Psalm 91, and it talks about how God is going to protect you, and he's going to, if you're under the shelter of his wings, you're in the shadow of the Almighty. And it was just like God was saying to me, hey, I'm still here, and it's going to be okay. Do you think I've abandoned you, Rick? And it was like, oh yeah. And so I was reading these things, I could sort of feel hope, like, oh, God still cares about me. And I started saying, okay, Lord, I don't like this. I don't know why this has happened, but I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to believe that you want to. And as I started praying, man, my spirits began lifting, and I experienced the peace of Christ. And it was an amazing thing to be able to go, okay, this hurts. And nobody's wronged me here, but it is sad, and I can still be sad, but I can still feel like there's hope for me, and God is still here, and it's life is going to be all right. Amazing thing was Lori got there, and I was able to sort of say, you know what? What I need to do now is encourage Lori and to think about how I can love her. And so that's what I did. And I began saying, Lori, you know what? God is with us in this. I know it's hard for both of us, but it's going to be good, and God is going to do this, and I think I can see you going off. And so I was talking to her. Unbeknownst to me, she was listening to all of this and going, yeah, but if Rick isn't there, I'm not going to like any of it. Within an hour, we were engaged to be married. Booyah! It was my plan all along. Here's the thing. I experienced the peace of Christ, and the peace of Christ enabled me to quit worrying about myself and start thinking about how I could love and encourage her. Life doesn't usually work out as neatly as it did for us that day. But the peace of Christ can strengthen us and give us the ability to love and to forgive. So here's the thing. Is there someone you need to forgive? Don't put it off. You're only hurting yourself if you hang on to the anger and the bitterness and the resentment. Forgive that person. That may mean that you need to tell them that you forgive them. It's possible it may be one of those situations where that person doesn't think they need forgiveness, and all you're forgiving them will do is make them angry. Well, you know what? Then I want to encourage you to tell yourself you've forgiven them, tell God you've forgiven them, and I want you to find someone you can trust to say, I want you to know this person hurt me in this way, but I choose to forgive. Verbalize it. Make it real. Maybe you need to write it in a journal. And then I want you to think about how can you focus on love in your relationships. Make it your goal to give of yourself to everyone that you have a relationship with, to give up taking care of you so you can give to them. And in order to do that, you're going to have to rely on the peace of Christ. Let it rule in your lives. If we do that, we're really going to simplify our relationships, and they're going to be a lot better. Let's pray.